Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting of our Reedley City Council to order. First on the agenda is our invocation, and I'd like to introduce or reintroduce Dale Freeman. He's one of the new chaplains for our police department, and he'll do our invocation. And following that, we'll have our Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Ray Soleno. Would you all rise with me, please?
In the scriptures, it says in Proverbs, "In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path." So let's ask him to do that this evening as we pray.
Thank you.
Heavenly Father, this evening we want to thank you for your mercy, for your grace, because so often we fall short of where you want us to be as a community. In reaching out to those around about us that are in need, we fall short, and we ask your forgiveness. We covet your presence with us here tonight. We ask for wisdom and knowledge and understanding in each item that's addressed on the agenda this evening. God, we pray for this assembly, for those on the City Council who have been chosen to be our civic leaders. And we pray, Lord, for those who are here as citizens of the community. We pray for all of them, Lord. May we wisely use this time in a positive direction toward making Reedley a better place to live, a safer environment for our families, Lord, and for our neighbors and our friends, and a place where visitors would come and want to say, "I would like to come back." So God, we ask for your blessings overflowing, and in your holy and precious name we ask this. Amen.
Amen. Ladies and gentlemen and youngsters, would you please join us in a salute to our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I have the roll call?
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Councilmember Soleno.
Yes.
Mayor Fass.
Here. This evening we have a presentation for Red Ribbon Week for the proclamation, and I'd like to call up Cindy. No.
Sonia.
Oh, hi.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor Fass. My name is Sonia Tyler. Good evening, council members, staff, and residents. My name is Sonia Tyler. I'm here representing the Red Ribbon Committee, and it's my pleasure today to introduce our Reedley Boys and Girls Club. So if I can have them come up. We'd like to also invite you to come out to our event this year. It's going to be held at the Reedley Armory. It's going to be this Friday, October the 26th. From 6 to 8 o'clock, so we would love for you to join us that evening. We have a lot of activities planned that evening. We've worked very, very hard with a lot of our committee members, and so I was here last year, and I was just so impressed with all of their hard work, and once again this year, they have done the same, so we hope to see you all that evening. So I'd like to have the Boys and Girls Club come up, please, and they will be reading the Red Ribbon Proclamation.
Great. Thank you.
So as they read each section of the proclamation, they will introduce themselves.
Okay. Hello, my name is Daniela Morello, and proclamation of the city of Reedley. Whereas alcohol and other drug abuse has reached pandemic stages in California and throughout the United States. And whereas it is imperative that community members launch unified and visible tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention and education programs and activities to eliminate the demand for these substances and...
Hello, my name is Jose Aguilera, Californians for Drug Free Youth Inc. Coordination, the California Red Ribbon Celebration in cooperation with the National Federation of Parents to offer our citizens opportunity to demonstrate their commitment to healthy drug-free lifestyles, and the Red Ribbon Celebration will be observed across America during Red Ribbon Week, October 23rd to 31st, 2012.
Hello, my name is Sully Garcia, and parents, youth, government, business, law enforcement, school, religious institutions, services, organizations, social services, health services, media, and the general public will demonstrate their commitment to drug-free communities by wearing and display red ribbons during this week-long celebration, and we recognize and commend to the contributions made by Kings Canyon Unified School District, Reilly Police Department, Reilly Middle College High School, Reilly Boys and Girls Club, Sunset Way System, Eminence Healthcare Inc., and the City of Reilly Community Services Department.
Hello, my name is Tenoch Aguilera. The community of Reilly further commits its resources to ensure the success of the Red Ribbon Celebration.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mary L. Fast, Mayor of the City of Reilly, and the Reilly City Council hereby proclaim October 23rd to 31st, 2012, as Red Ribbon Week, and encourage all citizens to participate in tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention programs and activities, making a visible statement and commitment to healthy, drug-free communities in which to raise a generation of drug-free youth. And be it further resolved that the City Council of the City of Reilly encourage all community members to pledge no use of illegal drugs and no illegal use of legal drugs. And I have a proclamation for you folks. Let's see, since you're like the leader of the group, I guess you're the designee.
Thank you very much.
And we look forward to a lot of success with this program.
Thank you very much. We appreciate
Thank
that.
Thank you, kids.
Thank you. Great job.
Thank you, Mayor Fast, members of the council, city staff, and residents. At this time, the students of Grant Middle School would like to present the council with a small gift from Red Ribbon Committee. Thank you. We hope to see you there that evening.
Good night.
Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the city manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment this evening? Seeing none, we'll move to the next item. The consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. We have on the agenda consent items 3 to 9, and that should be listed as items 2 to 8. Would anyone like to pull an item from our consent agenda?
I'd like to pull out number 7 for some discussion.
Okay, I'd like to pull number 6. Any others?
Move to approve the remainder of the consent.
Okay, is there any public comment on any of those other items on our consent agenda? Seeing none, we've heard a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Mayor Mas.
Yes. item 6 is to approve a resolution number 2012-086 in support of Pacific Gas and Electric Company's proposal to establish an enhanced economic development rate. And I'll turn it over to our city manager.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of council. This is a pretty exciting opportunity for the Central Valley that has only come up, as I know, once before. PG&E has presented the Valley with an option, and actually it's not just the Valley, but 21 other counties that are economically depressed, an option to have a new rate for businesses that are either going to move out of state, which would prompt job loss in an already high unemployment area. Also, for businesses that we may be able to recruit into California, they would get this enhanced economic development rate, or businesses that choose to expand if they're 200 kilowatt users or higher, so we would be able to promote job growth. Tonight here with us, Jeanette Ishii from PG&E has walked in, so thank you for being here, Jeanette. Bob Riding from PG&E is here for the greenhouse gas inventory, but I do want to introduce him since he's also with PG&E. This particular rate was introduced by the City of Fresno and other municipalities about 7 months ago. We did go to public hearings in front of the California Public Utilities Commission. You may recall that Ms. Betancourt spoke on behalf of the city. I spoke on behalf of the city. We felt like we were getting some good momentum to get this rate approved. In fact, some of the irrigation districts and other private utility providers have come up against this enhanced economic development rate because they feel they can't be competitive if, in fact, this rate goes through. So we're at a position where settlement talks have fallen through, and we'd like the CPUC to go ahead and rule on this particular rate and allow PG&E to move forward. To do that, the City of Fresno and the other municipalities have asked for cities to provide a resolution of support for the enhanced economic development utility rate. I did put a two-page brochure on your desk in front of you so you can read a little bit more about it later on. But at this point, there is no fiscal action associated with this. It is simply a resolution of support. However, I do think this will ultimately impact many of the businesses here in Reedley, since we do have an unemployment rate that is twice that of the City of Fresno. So,
great. Okay, are there any questions of our council on this issue?
Would this have anything to do with the article that was in the paper between Selma and the Water District? Do we have anything that would probably affect us at all?
No. Okay. No.
All right.
Jeanette, did you want to say a few words on behalf of PG&E?
Actually, only if there are questions, I'd be very happy to respond. Excuse me.
Good evening, Mayor and honorable members of the City Council. Jeanette Ishii, Pacific Gas and Electric Company. And really, your city manager, Nicole Ziva, did a wonderful job of summarizing what this proposal would do. We had hoped that we could have reached some settlement with some of the opposition, but it looks like we were not successful in doing that. So it will now continue to move forward through the process, and ultimately it will be the CPUC that makes a determination as to whether or not they will accept the proposal as it is or make changes to it.
Can I ask a question? Is this something that's a statewide? This would be statewide once it's approved, or is this something that's like an area-wide program?
This would only be effective within the Pacific Gas and Electric service area. So that would be actually 48 of the 58 counties is included in our service area.
Okay. So it would be statewide in the PG&E regions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
There would be a 12% for counties that are have a regular unemployment rate, but those that have a 25% higher than the statewide average would be eligible for a 35% discount.
Wow. That's huge. If you have a lot of electrical use in a business.
Particularly in the Central Valley, you'll notice on the second page of that brochure, there's about 21 counties that this will hit directly, including some up north. But in the Central Valley, our rates tend to be higher. We have higher temperatures, we have more food processing and things that require more kilowatt use of energy, so this really is critical for us.
It's another tool for the state of California to compete with other states to attract businesses to this region. And as Nicole mentioned, it's 200 kV or greater, and they need to be looking at an out-of-state alternative. So we want to keep business in California and create jobs here.
Mm-hmm. While working on my regular day job as in ag and having a cold storage and a processing plant, I know how expensive the PG&E bill is every month. So that, I think, would be very advantageous to any ag processing plants around here. So I would like to support that. There any comments or questions for Jeanette this evening?
I would just like to thank PG&E for stepping up and trying to help the communities that are in need at this time with the assistance with their power bills. And I think this is a way to bring jobs back to this community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. We're hopeful that it will help. I want to make sure that you understand that this is just for businesses that are expanding or coming in from out of state that would be eligible for this criteria.
Great. Okay, any other questions? Are there any questions or concerns from the public on this issue? Thank you, Jeanette, for
thank you very much.
Time to come this evening.
So I'll make a motion to approve the resolution. Is that how we would do it? Number 2012-086?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez?
Yes.
Mayor Bass?
Yes. Item 7 is to adopt resolution number 2012-087. Of the City Council of the City of Reedley awarding a construction contract in the amount of $17,800 to Universal Coatings, Inc. to replace the skylight at the Opera House.
Okay, I know we're obligated because of our contract that we have with the Opera House, and that is our building, but I'm having some concern for the money that that we continue to spend on the repairs, because it is an old building. And it will continue to use money, and it's coming out of community service, and it's being supplemented by our general fund. And the rent we receive from the people, the Opera House, doesn't even cover the electric bill.
that we pay each month. And we have been told that for several years they would be able to sustain themselves. We had to close our pool because we couldn't afford it. And that pool was really important to us, and we had to close it. And I don't know what's going to happen next summer, even if the bond passes, which it will. We're still going to be a couple of years before we can have a pool. And the other day I heard two women saying how high our water and sewer rates were, and they didn't know how they could keep up with it. So, and I don't know what the winter weather is going to bring us, and if the unemployment continues, our families are going to have a real hard time to continue pay their utility bills, your electric bill, the water, and the gas. And it seems unfair that we continue to pay for the utilities of the Opera House, and that and that's not even covered by the rent. So I really feel we need to find a solution before our next budget. Other parts of the town bring in revenue, and I just feel that we need to do something. I don't know how long we can keep supplementing and on the budget that we're in. So just wanted to share that.
Okay. Were there any comments from any other council people on this issue?
You know, one of the things that we need to realize that the Opera House is one of the oldest buildings in the city of Reedley. And with the plays that they put on year after year, it attracts an awful lot of people from outside. Yes, it's a little costly, but you know, this is one of the historic events that we have in the city of Reedley, and hate to see it go, and I think we need to support it as long as they're in existence. And I would totally object to not helping them at all. So
I kind of look at something a little different than maybe both directions there. I'm looking at a piece of property owned by the city that's deteriorating, and it's just going to get worse. Whether someone's in there or not, we've got to look at the possibility of causing major damage. And I would hate to see that the rot happen and a roof collapse because of an issue of this nature. And I'm more concerned about the property as far as whether it's housing a Opera House or it's housing any kind of business in there. We still have an issue, I think, with the damage occurring to the property. And I think that's something we have to address.
You know, for years we've, as they come to us with some concerns, we have helped them in trying to keep the building up to par so that they can continue to have their plays. So if we lose that, it's just going to sit there and not be active, and what do we do with it next?
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with Councilman Beck that we have a building to maintain and to keep in good order, just like we keep any other building that's owned by our city. And yes, this is an older facility, and as I know very well, an older building takes a little bit more care. But I think we've done some work at the community center on the roof, and because there was a need there, and there's a need here, and I think we need to take care of it. And I appreciate the staff being proactive in that to keep from getting further damaged. Is there any other public comment on this issue? Any other comments or questions from our council? Seeing none, may I entertain a motion?
Move to approve item number 7.
Second.
Call for the question.
I apologize. Who did the second?
Chavez.
Thank you. Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Mayor Fass.
Yes. The next section is the workshops, and item 9 is government operations, greenhouse gas emissions inventory presentation by the Economic Development Corporation, the EDC.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of council, I'd like to introduce Kevin Smith, for those of you who haven't met him, from the EDC, as well Bob Riding, as I introduced earlier, from PG&E. You may be aware that AB 32 and SB 375 were passed requiring government agencies to do some greenhouse gas inventory emission reports. The EDC, recognizing that a lot of us small cities don't have the staff and resources to do such a complex program, did in fact come forward and assist us all by providing some intern help to do this greenhouse gas inventory. We're pleased to have them present the report. They'll take about 10, 15 minutes, walk us through, and then from this point forward, we can talk afterwards about where we go from here.
Thank you for that introduction. Yes, this project has involved several partners, and we've in fact Reedley is one of 19 jurisdictions that we're doing these reports for, that include also, you know, the county of Fresno, Madera, Chowchilla, Dinuba, as well as all of the jurisdictions within Fresno County. So, again, as Ms. Ziba mentioned, you know, this has involved Pacific Gas and Electric Company, so we thank them for their support, as well as the City of Fresno, and technical support from a group called ICLEI. The project was funded by Pacific Gas and Electric Company. It's through what's now known as the Local Governments and Sustainable Communities Program. Was provided at no cost to your jurisdiction. And in doing the report, certain things may come to mind, and in fact, it may assist Reedley in reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. But as I go through this presentation, one of the other things that I want to emphasize is that it can help reduce your overall energy consumption, and as a result of that, can help save the city money and, as a result of that. Sometimes the first question that comes to mind is, why conduct the inventory? Greenhouse gas emissions are a priority for the state, and government operations daily result in greenhouse gas emissions. That can be from burning natural gas, gasoline in city vehicles, any number of things. But in terms of the benefit of this particular project, one of the things we're looking at is building staff capacity, in the sense that getting used to the protocol that's involved in doing something like this. And then, as I mentioned, reducing energy consumption and the cost that goes along with that, the idea is that it'll help improve services that the city provides, because any money that you're not spending on, say, your electricity or your natural gas is something that you could be spending, say, on public safety or parks or any other number of things that help improve the overall quality of life in this community. And that's perhaps why the EDC is involved in this. You know, we attract clients to the area, and anything that we can do to help improve the quality of life within our communities is something that we're very interested in doing. As I mentioned, the state has made greenhouse gas reductions a priority, and so there are certain legislation and regulations that are involved in that. As was mentioned, was AB 32. The scoping plan was adopted by the Air Resources Board in 2008, and it encouraged local governments to reduce their emissions by 15% by 2020. But maybe perhaps the legislation that has the most direct impact may be SB 97. And in that, the Air Resources Board was tasked with creating energy use and transportation thresholds for CEQA reviews. And to kind of go off of that, in essence, what that means is that it may require local governments to then account for greenhouse gas emissions when reviewing project applications. So again, getting involved in this early, getting a concept of how this works, so that that can assist the city moving forward. In terms of conducting this inventory, it's based off what's called the Local Government Operations Protocol. And that was developed by the Air Resources Board in conjunction with several other agencies. And the idea behind that is that it sets up certain, as you see, accounting principles, boundaries, as in what should be counted and not counted, the methods for collecting that information, the procedures for that. And the idea behind that being that, you know, we don't want one city doing it one way and perhaps another city doing it another way. We want to get a consistency among these reports in the sense of what's included, what's not included, and how that information is collected. You'll see throughout the report that it uses often what's called a carbon dioxide equivalent, or CO2e scale. And the idea behind that, if you will, is that no greenhouse gas is created equal, in the sense that, for example, you see nitrous oxide up there has a global warming potential of 310. So for every 1 ton of nitrous oxide that's released into the atmosphere, you're talking about the equivalent of 310 tons of carbon dioxide. And so what it's doing is converting that into a common scale so that we can do this, as I've put there, apples to apples comparison, so that you can see, for example, a refrigerant that may be leaked that has a major impact on the global warming emissions, even though it may be relatively small in the actual quantity, is actually quite a bit in terms of the scale that we're using. So in terms of what's included in the inventory, it's emissions from local government operations, so it's not going to include something from a corner store or something like that. It's from your day-to-day operations. And the boundary that we use is we say that it's something you have operational or financial control over. So the idea being that you can't be held responsible to lower the emissions of something you don't have control over. That wouldn't necessarily be fair to the city. So, for example, I put up there some items that you may have control over. For example, you have natural gas. If, for example, you had set your thermostat 1 degree lower in the winter, you might have consumed less natural gas. You have wastewater treatment plants. The way that you treat wastewater can, in fact, have different results in terms of your greenhouse gas emissions. And one thing I did want to put up there as well, because, as I mentioned earlier, there are certain maybe things that might come to mind when you think of greenhouse gas emissions. You might think of, from your gasoline when it's coming out the tailpipe. You might have thought of the natural gas. But, for example, certain things like fire suppressants and refrigerants can have a major impact on the local government operations emissions as a result of leakage or deployment of those different kinds of substances. The report is based on what we're calling a scopes framework. The idea is that we're going to classify these emissions into different scopes depending on how much control you actually have over those emissions. So, for example, scope one is the most direct emissions. I mentioned natural gas, the gasoline. These may be the things that first come to mind when you think of quantifying your greenhouse gas emissions. But then there are certain things that become more indirect, which you, in fact, do have control over. For example, your scope two, we're calling those indirect emissions. That would be your electricity consumption. So when the electricity is created, PG&E is creating that electricity for your use. You may not actually have control over how that electricity was created, but you do have control over how much electricity you actually consume. Going back to the thermostat idea, again, in the summer you set it 1 degree higher, that would have resulted in fewer emissions because you're not consuming that much electricity. Now, each year that changes from year to year based on the portfolio of PG&E's production of electricity. And so for the year baseline year here in this report, we did use that. For different years, there'll be different amounts. As we're headed forward into the future, PG&E is working on creating more of their electricity from renewable resources. Now for scope three, those are the most indirect types of emissions. So I have employee commute there, and that might not be something you most naturally think of as coming from government operations. For example, you may not have control over how much a particular employee drives to and from work in their own personal vehicle. But say, for example, if the city had incentivized carpooling or taking public transit or even walking if they live close by, that could reduce the amount of emissions from that employee commute. We also have decomposition of government-generated waste. In that same vein, you may not have control over what an individual employee does with any piece of the waste that they've generated. But, for example, if you had, say, incentivized recycling or other waste diversion programs, then that does have some control over how much of that goes into a landfill and how much of that results in greenhouse gas emissions. And the last thing I get into before we get into some overall totals in the report is just to understand what these totals mean. This is a baseline. And so in that respect, there's no really good or bad. It's a snapshot in time. It's what was or is at that time. So it's not necessarily useful to compare to other governments in that respect, in the sense that, we calculated the emissions based on the best available estimation methods, the emissions that could be inventoried. But also, for example, governments provide different services. So, for example, you have wastewater treatment. If it was Fowler, Selma, or Kingsburg, they have SKF, which is not something they have control over. So that would not have been included in their report. So that might create some of those differences. So based on that idea, trying to do comparisons, it would have to take a very, as it's said in the report, keen analysis of the differences in types of government services to not just then compare one-to-one. They have this much emissions, we have that much emissions. So again, the focus then should be on reducing your current emissions as in comparison to the baseline year. As I mentioned, I'm going to go over some of the overall totals. The more focused information based on individual departments is contained within the report. So this is the total for the city. It is broken down by sector, so the different thing that's creating the greenhouse gas emissions. You can see that over a quarter of it came from the vehicle fleet in the baseline year. You have water transport at 22% and water treatment facilities at 20%. So you're looking at a little over 40% of your emissions are coming from the movement of water, whether that's drinking water or whether that's treatment, those kinds of things. So that's maybe when you're considering a way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, that may be an area to look because it's, as you can see, the biggest piece of the pie. The total amount that we were looking at for the baseline year was about 2,200 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, going back to that scale that we had talked about. And then these are the emissions by the particular source, not necessarily by what sector emitted them. So in this case, you can see that over half of the emissions came from electricity. So for example, your buildings may consume electricity for your air conditioning, but your wastewater treatment plant may use electricity for pumping the water. So again, even though this isn't by the source, it's the overall area where those emissions are coming from. So if you were looking again at a way to reduce those emissions, since electricity seems to be a big part of it, that may be an area to look. You can also see that gasoline was over a quarter of the emissions in terms of their source. And as I mentioned, greenhouse gas emissions, when we're talking about it, is not only in the sense that you're reducing those emissions. There's typically an energy source that goes along with that, and as a result, a cost. So we're not just talking about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, we're also talking about ways to save money. And as you can see here, by the source, 73% of it comes from electricity and 19% again from gasoline. So going with that previous slide that we just looked at, but one of the important things that you may want to draw your attention to is that almost $1 million went towards energy costs in the baseline year. So if you did a 10% overall reduction across all of these energy sources, you could be talking about perhaps in the area of $100,000 worth of savings. Now granted, the city, I'm sure, has made reductions since the baseline year that this report covers, so that may be lower. But just again to reiterate, there is a potential for significant savings in terms of reducing your energy usage. So it's not just about those greenhouse gas emissions, we're also talking about dollars as a result. And so then the natural question that may come as a result of completing this report is, well, what do we do now? So as we've done here, we've established this baseline. What you can do is you can establish monitoring and annual reporting so that you can conduct a report for the current year and then each subsequent year to maybe compare to where you were. And as you're doing that, again, we're looking at ways of lowering greenhouse gas emissions, but there's also opportunities to lower energy consumption and the costs that go along with that. So when you're doing these reports and you're gathering the information, you're not only getting information on the electricity consumption, but you're also for the greenhouse gas, but you're also seeing how much cost went along with that and how much did we actually use. One of the other things you can do is conduct a community-wide inventory and look for potential to reduce that way. You can develop an energy action plan, and what that does is it's similar to some of the other planning that the city may do, which takes a realistic look at where you're at right now, where you'd like to be, and realistically, how can you get there? And it sets some strategies and priorities for doing that. You can also look for grants. There are certain grants that are available for people who have conducted jurisdictions that have conducted these inventories. You can also maybe perhaps use it as supporting evidence in those grants. But one of the things, again, just to emphasize is that you may submit this grant application with the intent of lowering your greenhouse gas emissions, but there may also be potential for cost savings as well. So, and with that, I just wanted to mention that there will be a PG&E representative that will be in contact with city staff to help discuss their available resources and options to help, you know, not only reduce those greenhouse gas emissions, but also the energy consumption and cost that goes along with it. And then the last thing, just before taking questions, I did want to mention, this CD contains the software that we use to conduct the inventory. It also contains the template for the report that we used, with the idea being that, you know, hopefully this goes a little, now that you've got that information, it'll be a little smoother going forward, so it's a little easier to conduct the inventories in the future. So, I guess we'll just hang it up there. And with that, if there are any questions.
Well, it was interesting to know how many items cause these emissions, especially electricity. You never thought that electricity would do that much, but I guess it's one of the biggest items. One of the things that really caught my eye was the reason for not carpooling, reasons for not taking transit, reasons for not walking or biking the city. You know, these are some of the things that maybe we in the future can take a look and maybe help in that direction. So, sure. To me, it was just interesting.
Yep.
I appreciated your PowerPoint presentation and was wondering if we're going to get a copy of that.
It's actually on the CD.
Okay, great. Thank you. Some interesting things to think about, and you put a lot of work into this.
Well, I would like to mention, yes, that I'm sorry I didn't mention it because he's not here tonight, but Randy Walter, your intern, I shouldn't mention him for the record. He did a wonderful job as well, too, and he's unfortunately, fortunately for him, pursuing higher education. He's in class down in Northridge tonight, but I want to make sure that he gets some credit as well, too. So.
I was just going to comment about the variables that go into play for these tests and stuff with design, I guess, of a building and age of a building and everything else that all plays into the numbers.
Yeah.
And we have a volunteer fire department. You know, if we had people on at the fire department all the time, you know, that would certainly raise the numbers for us and other communities that have full-time fire departments. And anyway, just a point I was making.
Well, there's always ways to save.
Sure.
But sometimes it goes at the cost of our personal, what do I say, feeling or preferences.
Sure. Yeah, there are certain behavioral changes just in terms of things like, for example, you know, wearing a sweater. Kind of things like that, but the idea with a lot of this too, and a lot of the technology is coming down, is how can we do this without having to sacrifice personal comfort? So you know, doing envelope sealing, or you know, even just having certain kinds of technologies that can be deployed that use less energy to achieve the same result.
That's great. Some good food for thought. And we appreciate the help to help us stay in compliance, too. Are there any other questions of our council? Any questions from the public on this issue? Thank you, Kevin,
Great.
For coming this
much.
Evening and being a part of this.
Great, thank you.
Item 10 is a presentation on animal control operations. Mr. Ettinger.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of the council. I'm here tonight in place of Chief Garza, who was unable to attend, but I will be giving the presentation tonight. I'd like to start off by saying that this is a process that we have been scrutinizing closely over the last 45 to 60 days. There wasn't a lot of foresight in how this was all going to end, but when SPCA made their decision to opt out of all the contracts with pretty much everybody in the county, we were forced at that point, not knowing which direction we were going to be able to go, to start really roundtabling this from a lot of different angles. I personally went up and met with the SPCA about a month ago and talked with their director, and his words to me were they've had a very good relationship with the city of Reedley. They were very impressed with John Urbano, who is our animal control officer, and they said he is probably one of the most professional animal control officers they deal with on a regular basis. But with that being said, he was unfortunately unable to offer us any type of an agreement and or contract or supply us with any service from that point forward. So with that being said, I went and met with Liberty, who has taken over animal control services for the county, and they now house the old county morgue and have transformed that facility into a fairly quickly makeshift animal control shelter. I met with them, and they seem very gracious to work with us. However, the amount of space that they currently have with the initial installation of their facilities is probably not even going to be enough to house all the animals in the county, let alone any animals from outlying cities. And we got that word about 2 weeks ago. And so since that time, Chief and I have had several roundtables and also met with our animal compassion groups that we deal with, primarily ACT. We went and met with the Cat House on the Kings River, Noah's Friends, and basically wanted to get their input on, number one, could they provide us any service? And number two, since they deal with this on a daily basis, what were their recommendations? Because basically from the two large agencies being SPCA and Liberty, they really couldn't give us any direction as a small entity. So we had some good discussion. We came up with some good, I would call them temporary options that we are going forward with at this point that I'll outline here in this process. And I can tell you that all of those groups that we currently work with, being ACT, and even though we don't specifically deal with the Cat House on the Kings, they're very willing to work with us in future endeavors, which I'll go into here shortly. Needless to say, we have been forced to look at expanding our current pound facility as it stands now, because currently we do not have a place to take any of our animals. The end of the contract agreements, all of our animals that we could not return to owners here in the city were taken to the SPCA. And since that stopped, we really don't have a place to take them other than to house them here locally. So with that being said, we came up with a process, I would say a fairly inexpensive cost process. And it's not listed here specifically, but it is a fairly a small dollar amount that was already budgeted in. It's not a new budget request. We're going to be doubling our kennel space within our pound and putting up a temporary shed outside of the building to house all the supplies and equipment, which will give us the rest of the inside of the building to house animals. We currently have put a moratorium on picking up cats within the city. Unless they are severely injured or sick, we will take them to the vet and get an analysis from our local veterinarians that we've also met with in this process. Dr. Graves here on I Street. So for the community, it's going to be important that we go forward with some education on what our current process is with animal control. And just to kind of go down the outline that you should have there with your handouts, for any stray animals that we pick up, which would only be dogs at this point and or non-injured animals, we are expanding our impound time frame up to 10 days, and I could see that even being pushed out to 14 days if necessary, because there again, we do not have a place to take these animals. So we are wanting to expand that time out and give the animal groups that we worked with, primarily ACT, a longer period of time to adopt these animals out to good homes.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Do you know how many animals are returned back to owners in Reedley once they're collected or picked up?
On an average, and I apologize, I don't have the exact numbers, and I'm just trying to calculate really quickly in my head. I would say out of about 35 dogs, and I'm just talking about dogs, but about 35 dogs per month that we average, I would say about 7 would be an average number.
About 20%.
Yeah. So there are a lot of our animals in the past that have gone north to Fresno that don't get returned to owners. We have owner relinquished animals that even if they're healthy, the owners don't want them back. So we're also going to be looking at that process on whether or not we're even going to accept those animals if they're healthy from the owners at this point. But I can tell you the animal groups, compassion groups that we are working with are very, they're very excited about the opportunity to come in here and really try to do some more work. And I was surprised to hear, but when we went and did some of these talks, that many of the dogs that are adopted are actually going out of country. I think they said that we went had our roundtable out at the cat house. There was they had just shipped a group of, I think, 20 or 25 chihuahuas to Canada. Mm-hmm. And there were some that went even overseas. So I was kind of surprised to hear that, but apparently there's a shortage or a need for those types of animals in those locations. So those groups don't just try to adopt locally, which I think would, you know, it actually would probably just add to our problem if we're just adopting animals back into our own area, but they actually look for areas that maybe are lacking in pets, which I know we are not here. So we're excited to have them work with us, and it's at really no cost to us. So that is a good thing. I mean, budgetary-wise, we're not talking about a lot of extra dollars here. We're actually going to be saving money on the numbers of trips that we make to Fresno and for the cost of each animal that we dropped off up there. We're also looking at the option of doing some public adoptions ourselves outside of the animal groups if we end up with more animals that they can deal with in a month's time frame. Looking at possibly volunteer staffing, some sort of an animal adoption program here in the city. And if we did do that, we got a commitment from the cat house at the Kings. They would, free of charge, spay and neuter all of those animals prior to adopting them out. So it wouldn't be a cost on our part as a city to spay and neuter those animals before we turn them back into the public. Talking about stray and injured animals on the other side of the column there that we would pick up or come across, any stray or injured animals that appear to be sick in any way, and obviously injured animals that have been hit by a vehicle or something to that effect, will have to be taken directly to our local vet. And we have, as I said, been in talks with Dr. Graves here in town and also Dr. Gray out on Dinuba Avenue just south or east of town. And in the event that we have an animal that we have no option but to euthanize, either based on injury, demeanor, things of those nature, an animal that's not safe to return back out to the public. We do have an agreement with them that they will euthanize our animals here for us in the event that we have to get to that point. But as you can see, there are a lot of boxes and alternatives and options here prior to us getting to that point, and that's our goal. If you look at the bottom on any future plan, we obviously are going to have to go out and do some public education on this fairly quickly. We don't want to do it too soon until we really have sat down. And I know that some of the other cities and the city manager we have talked to, and I know the other city managers are going to be talking about this at a round table and looking at collectively what can we do globally here for a regional plan. So we also have a commitment from the animal groups that they will do free of charge spay and neuter clinics with us here in town, which I think we need to do more of. And then obviously our relationship with those groups is going to be critical and key through this process to make sure that we look at every possible alternative to what we have available to do with the animals that are within our city. So with that being said, that's what I have to present. So are there any questions tonight?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you're going to be trying to expand the dog pound we have today. You know, that thing has been there for years. And by expanding it, you're going to have more dogs that you can keep there. But the nice thing about it is that when somebody loses a dog, they can call the police department. And in the past, Ralph Urbano did a fantastic job. Or John?
John, yes.
He did a fantastic job. I know we lost our Cocker Spaniel twice because he knew our dog. He didn't take it to the pound. Yeah. He just called and said, your dog is loose. Mm-hmm. So, but one of the important things is the license that the dogs have to have. That's very important. So if they lose it, you can respond to the individuals.
Absolutely. And when we put on these clinics as well, we'll be looking at the licensing side of it and also the microchipping which I think is a huge asset if you're a pet owner at this point.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure when you went to management school, this wasn't so this is all.
We didn't talk about dogs at all, I guarantee you.
Anyway, you guys are doing a good job. I know this was dropped on you guys, but it's a very important service that you're providing. I just wanted you to know that.
Thank you.
Anyway, I appreciate it.
You know, and the other thing too, and I will say, and I, as you mentioned, expanding the pound, we're doing the expansion that we feel like we can do inexpensively at this point. You know, that pound is a very old facility, and at this point, without having a future plan, you know, let's say a 5-year plan, we don't want to put a bunch of money into it, into a facility that may not be there in 5 years. So we're doing it cautiously and wisely, but nevertheless, we are able to do it. So
it wouldn't hurt to publicize that donations could be accepted from the public. Mm-hmm. Hello?
Yeah, and that's donations of money, not animals, by the way.
And we also got a commitment from the Cat House on the Kings to, if we end up doing public adoptions ourselves and staffing that with volunteers, we kind of have a commitment from them to give us a portable trailer to put down there in what used to be the old range and canine training facility in that grassy area there.
Okay.
We had thought maybe it would be a good location to adopt pets since it's right next to the pound, so we're also keeping an eye on that possibility.
Lieutenant, did I hear you say something? You guys had been also in contact with Noah's Friends?
Yes.
How are they to work with? I know that they're a no-kill shelter, so they're pretty much into getting dogs out to, or their animals out to other people.
Yeah, they are. And that was actually the first time that I'd sat at the table with them. It was Noah's Friends, and the Cat House on the Kings. We all sat together. That was the first time I'd met with them, but the level of commitment from all of those groups is equal, and they're all on board with willing to help with whatever they can with us. So
that's great.
Goodness. Yeah, this is an interesting situation that we didn't envision ourselves being in. After 20 years or so of a handshake agreement with the SPCA being able to drop off animals, we literally were at their front door on October 1st and they turned us away. So we had a situation where we're bringing dogs back to Reedley that we couldn't leave there. So I think between Lieutenant Chief and John Urbano, they've done a fantastic job of pulling together a short-term plan in a very short period of time. And I do want to publicly thank ACT Animal Compassion Team, because they have adopted out about 70% of our dogs, and that was before we knew the SPCA option was going away. So even before we knew that option was going away, we were able to adopt out locally a lot of our pets and animals. So Jody, if you could publicize ReedleyHomelessPets.com as all of our animals that are up for adoption. And John has taken on the duty of photographing those and getting them up on the website. So he's taken on additional duty. So we have a gentleman who has just really got a heart for these animals.
Yes, he does. So.
John's been doing a great job.
Yeah. And long-term, the lieutenant mentioned, the city managers, obviously we're not alone in this. Every city that was working with the SPCA is dealing with the same issue right now, other than the city of Fresno, who had a contract, so they were able to get an extension, and the county of Fresno with Liberty. All the other cities are in the same boat. So we are meeting to talk about a regional solution, and we'll keep you posted as that moves along.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, item 11 is under administrative business to adopt the resolution number 2012-083 of the City Council of the City of Reedley establishing a citywide policy for the disposition of surplus city property, junk material, and scrap metals.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council. The item before you tonight is actually a three-part item. The first of which is adopting a resolution that would establish a policy for the disposition of surplus city property and, as the mayor mentioned, junk material and scrap metal. The second item is to authorize the city manager or designee to declare certain items surplus and proceed with the disposition of the items in accordance with this city policy. And finally, to ratify the donation of a 1995 Kawasaki KZ1000 to Cruising for Jesus Incorporated, a California nonprofit corporation. The council may remember that this past summer, the council approved a services agreement with Interscholastic Trading Company, also known as Interscola, to assist the city of Reedley to sell surplus It's surplus property in an online auction environment and through other surplus goods channels. And since that point, we've exhaustively come up with a list. All staff were involved in this process to identify all surplus equipment in the city. The list has already been circulated to all city departments to review for possible reuse or redeployment. And we've met with auction specialists from Interscola that has already performed a review of the equipment. And there will actually, due to the volume of the equipment, there will actually need to be several rounds of auctions to process all of it. They'll start with kind of the bigger pieces first, and then we're going to systematically go through a lot of the equipment that's just kind of built up over the years. Some of it has value, some of it does not have value. And at this point, you know, through the next several months, we'll be able to go through pretty much everything that the city has that it's no longer using. This policy is in front of you tonight because the municipal code does not currently address policies or procedures for the disposition of surplus property, junk material, scrap metal, with the notable exception for certain items collected or confiscated by the police department. The attached resolution establishes a citywide policy, and it also provides appropriate oversight of the surplus disposition process with a residual value for equipment $1,000 or more for furniture, fixtures, or equipment, including vehicles. And the policy also states that items of any value that will be donated for charitable use must be approved by the council. So just to kind of to touch on the high points, the approval of this policy tonight will allow city staff to move forward with the disposition of all items that have been identified in the list that is attached to the council item. And going forward, for future auctions, if the item has a residual value of $1,000 or more, it will come before this body for approval. Or if the item is to be donated for non-city use, for charitable use, it will come before this council. So the only items that would not come before the council would be items with a value of less than $1,000. And part of this is just due to the administrative time and you know, coming up with the lists and taking it forward. You know, a lot of the items just don't have a whole lot of value, maybe a couple hundred dollars here or there. The policy does address that the funds will, the net proceeds from any auction activities will go back to the city's general fund unless the original funding source for that item was deemed to be a enterprise or a grant fund that would legally be protected from going back into the general fund. And then any use of those proceeds for anything would have to come back before the council because of an appropriation that would be required to spend the funds. So it's a policy that you know, sort of identifies all the major steps that are involved. It does talk about junk material and scrap metal because cities do come up over the years. They do accumulate scrap metal and junk material, and it does have a value. And it also talks about the fiscal and record controls necessary when you do dispose of property.
Okay. Any questions from the council on this issue?
You know, look at these, and looking at the information we have here, it's amazing the amount of items that we have in front of us here. And some of these have been, I guess, in place for quite some time. So by approving this tonight, will this be done annually so that we don't accumulate some of the stuff?
Yeah, we've got several years worth.
Yeah, in some cases, I've told Paul we need to contact an antique store, but in fact, we probably will not do this annually, but we probably will do this periodically as we see that we have materials that are no longer useful for the city.
One of the other questions I am going to ask is on the vehicles. We have 7 vehicles and then 1 van. Do we still have the senior patrol? Yes.
Yeah, it's currently still an active program. However, we have I would say one member at this point that comes out on a regular basis.
Is that right?
Yeah, and we are, we did keep two vehicles, older vehicles, that did not make it onto the surplus list, one of which we are turning into one of the white volunteer patrol cars with the orange lights.
Okay. Is there a reason why I'm asking if some of these could be retained for that program? Because in the past, some of those volunteers would complain that they'd have back problems with things that shake so much.
Yeah.
Well, these won't be much better.
Yeah, and these are better than the old ones used to be, but we did keep aside the ones that we felt were good enough to keep for those purposes, yes.
I think the senior patrol was a benefit to the city.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And you may recall that when we purchased the new police vehicles, part of the offset of those funds was to sell these older vehicles. So right. We were expecting to sell and use some of the funds to pay off the new ones.
Paul, on the equipment that was purchased through grant money, have we contacted the entities in charge of those grants to make sure that we could auction them off, and also what we would do with the money if there was any money?
Sure. In this instance, my comment about the grant funds was kind of a hypothetical, in that if we do have grant-funded equipment, it is my understanding that none of the equipment listed here was purchased by grant funds or by any grant funds that would require that it would go back to a specific use. But as we're made aware of any future property that we might get rid of, we can definitely pursue that route. I do want to thank Councilmember Chavez, because it was your comment back in July about whether or not we had a policy concerning the sale or disposition of surplus property. And, you know, after we went back, we realized that we didn't have one. So that kind of brought us to this point to have this policy. So mm-hmm.
The next question I had would be on inventory, and who is somebody designated in charge of inventory? Would that be you, Paul? And is that in the policy?
Right. Basically, the policy identifies, it calls out that the department or the operating division within that department would be responsible for identifying items as surplus. And so it's kind of pushed out to the departments, because only they know their true inventory, what's surplus and what still has life in it.
Well, maybe this is for another discussion, but I think somebody in the city should be responsible for inventory. And you know, whether you guys do an audit once every 2 years or once a year, I think especially if there's turnover too, the new person coming in has got to know what's there and what isn't there, and has got to take responsibility for what is there. So I don't know if you need to put that in a policy or in a practice, but I think it needs to be.
Yeah, there are many policies that we have on the list, and one of them would be an inventory control policy on the list to create. However, I will say that any inventory that we receive that's of a certain capital value is logged, because we do have to have it logged through our insurance authority. So things like the vehicles, we also do keep a list of the computers that we have and their serial numbers and the types of things that are of more value. Some of the smaller items, though, that you'll see, like the welders and things of that nature, are kept in inventory lists in each of the departments. So we do want to go back and make sure that we're doing periodic audits of those. But in fact, you've touched on another policy that is on the list to create, and we're sort of slowly and methodically moving through these. So,
great. Any other comments from the council on this issue? Any comments or questions from the public on this issue? Seeing none, what is the council's pleasure?
Move to adopt.
Second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Council, and that would be for A, B, and C?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Councilmember Chavez?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Before I say and give my answer, this Kawasaki, didn't we donate one of these before to Cruising for Jesus?
I believe that was probably the same one that is referred to in this document here. It was done under the prior administration.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Aye, thank you. Yes.
Mayor Faust.
Yes. Okay, council reports is item number 12. I'll start with Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay. I went to the open house for the fire department, and it was fun. I took the grandkids, and it was just a lot of fun. There was a lot of people, and that helicopter coming down and going up is so exciting. It really is. And then I also met with the third and sixth graders from T.L. Reed, because the mayor was not able to make it. So Sylvia did a really good job with the kids. Mm-hmm. And when she asked questions of who pays for certain things, they always kept saying the mayor. The mayor pays for this, and the mayor pays for that. And it was just cute that they thought the mayor pays for everything. So, but
and staff asked for a raise after that too.
But it was a fun afternoon, and they asked good questions, and Sylvia did a really good job making a presentation with them also. So
those are fun times. Uh-huh.
And then too, don't forget to vote. Whoever you vote for is fine, but please, please, please vote for Measure K. Our kids deserve nothing but the best, so we need to support our kids. So we need that. So that's it.
Okay. Mr. Beck?
I also attended the fire department's open house, and great job, Jerry. It was, had a lot of fun. My grandkids always enjoy that in the helicopter. Uh-huh. They all had to sit in it. Yeah. Also, last night I attended the Five Cities meeting. There was several items that came up for discussion, but was pretty much kind of put on hold because one of them was the regional wastewater treatment system that they're talking about. There were several of the people there wanted some cost factors involved in that. Plus, there was some question about that the state likes a regional systems, and so there's some more information that's got to come about that. The PEG information was pretty much put on hold last night because everybody's pretty much went back to this individual cities of handling that particular item on their own. So that's kind of staying where it's at. They're starting to promote the Five Cities through trade shows, and we're going to be seeing maybe a little bit more of our cities putting out to the other areas. So we need their, we want their employment, we want their business, we want anything they have to offer to come back this direction. So they're starting to show up like at the large farm shows in Tulare. They're going to, I believe, San Francisco shortly for a large food trade show that's up there. They're trying to wine and dine all the available and manufacturers that's wanting to put plants in the area down in this area. So there's some good things happening that way. I was at the Reedley College Friday along with Mayor. The entrepreneurship class over there is putting together quite a program. And I'm sure Mayor will expound on that, and I'll leave a little bit for her on that particular subject. Other than that, that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Councilman Solano?
No, the only thing I had was just the Southeast Regional Solid Waste Commission meeting was canceled for this month, so just looking forward to next month.
Okay.
Yeah. Nothing tonight, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. I also attended the open house for the fire department. And that's always a highlight for myself and for my grandkids. And their favorite thing was the ladder trucks. And they wanted to go to the top of that ladder. I said, well, maybe someday. But for now, no. Also enjoyed visiting with the different entities from the county and the different cities that were represented. You had a host of trucks there that night. And and everyone that I spoke to said they were always happy to come to this event and very willing to come. So kudos to our department. We're a volunteer department, and you guys are really great at reaching out to a lot of different people. And I think our department is great at also helping other departments. And Jerry, your leadership that helps to entertain that. So thank you. I had an interesting luncheon invitation to the Arte America up in Fresno. And they're going to be hosting an exhibit from the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. on American Sabor. And this is the Latinos in U.S. popular music. And I wanted to just read just a quick little section on this on the back of one of their brochures. This was created by Experience Music Project and organized for travel by the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service. The exhibition, its national tour, and related programs are made possible by Ford Motor Company. Discover much more about the history and influence of Latin music in the United States, or share your own Latin music story or photo on the exhibition website, www.americansabor.org. And it was just a delightful day. They had a representative from the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., and also from Ford Motor Company. And this is the first time that this group has come to California. And Fresno was the designated center for that because it's in the center of the state and there are a lot of Latinos here. So I'm hoping that I'm going to try to get this to our public schools to see if maybe some of their classes can go up there and take a tour of that. I think it'd be really inspirational to many of the kids. Also got to be a part of the fiesta, the king and queen crowning. Eddie and Debbie Jimenez were the king and queen this year. And that was a fun evening for myself and their family. The Fiesta Parade was another great event and a lot of work on a lot of volunteers' part. And I saw emails going back and forth thanking the city for their involvement. And so kudos to you leaders in our city that helped with that in different ways. Reedley College, like Mr. Beck said, had the open house for the new entrepreneurial center. And this is a center that's going to act as an incubator for new business development and, I say, creativity in Reedley and in our area to promote small businesses. And Kevin, I hope you'll get involved with that group and be a resource for them, and they can be a resource also for us. A lot of brains in those kids, man. They took a few minutes and shared about what each one of them was working on and what they were promoting and developing, and unbelievable knowledge over there. So I was real excited about that. Also attended a Love Inc. Fundraiser Saturday evening with Mayor Pro Tem Betancourt was also there, and they're beginning a new program again. Love Inc. closed for a while, and they're starting up again and serving a lot of the needy in our community. So you'll probably be seeing more information about that in the exponent and in different ways. Also wanted to comment on the EDC. I believe it was the last couple of weeks or so, you gave us a flyer of what was in the EDC's annual report for Reedley. Wow. If you haven't seen that, you got to get a copy, because it was just very well put together, and it was short but very succinct and very clear, and I thought it was a great presentation to Reedley. So thank you, staff, for that. And that's all I have. Staff reports?
Yes, we have a few staff members who'd like to present some information, but I did want to pass on a few things. One, you may have heard the Carmelita Mine did pass through the Board of Supervisors on a 3-1 vote. As you know, we worked very hard, Joel's group worked very hard to make sure that all the mitigation measures were in place for our airport. So whether it passed or not was not so much of an issue for us. We wanted to make sure those mitigation measures stayed in place, and they did stay in place for that permit. So that's a good thing for us. The Centennial Committee is kicking along, and we have our next meeting tomorrow at 4. Those are open to the public, so if anybody wants to participate in planning for the Centennial, which officially is February of 2013, we'll turn 100. And couple other issues. I will be releasing information shortly to you about the situation with the Orange Cove water, and in fact we will probably have this to you in a council meeting on November 13th, so keep posted for that. And lastly, next week is a webinar that's being put on by the National League of Cities on the sequestration issues. For those of you who've been watching the debates, you hear that word a lot. You may not know exactly what it is. It's really across the board cuts that were put into place if in fact certain budget measures were not met by the federal government. What we keep hearing in the media is sequestration and how it impacts the military, but in fact there are impacts that will hit us locally. That includes hits and cuts to housing programs, our COPS hiring and universal hiring programs, as well as CDBG. So there are more hits than people realize if, in fact, sequestration goes through. Now, if you watched the debate last night, you saw the president say it will not happen. Remains to be seen. So after the webinar next week, we'll be able to provide you more information on the specific hits to programs that we have here in Reedley. Hmm. So, Paul, I know you have some information.
Thank you, City Manager. I just we wanted to share some news with the council. We just completed our open enrollment period for city medical plans, and we took sort of a targeted approach this year instead of just doing general classes that employees could come to learn about their medical plans and what the changes in the premium rates would be. We actually targeted the folks that were in the higher cost plans, because a lot of those plans are going up January 1. So we focused in on just a select group of folks, and we really did a lot of focused education with them about if they switch to a lower cost plan, their benefits would actually not change. Just it's a smaller provider network. So as long as their doctor or doctors are in the smaller network, they can make a switch, save themselves money, and also save the city some money too. So it was fairly successful. The net change from open enrollment January 1 will be savings of just over $61,000 to the city, and that's on an annual basis. And I'm very pleased to share that of that $61,000, $35,822 was from the cash in lieu program that the council just approved about a month ago now. We had three employees that chose to participate in the program, and just those three employees are going to net the city almost $36,000 in savings next year. Now, that's not all just the general fund. That's spread out amongst all the operating funds, so just to make sure everybody knows, it's not just right in the general fund. So, but a portion of it is in the general fund, of course. But anyway, so it's just nice to, to take something forward and then have some almost immediate financial result for the city. So that was a kind of a citywide effort. So good. Thank you.
Great.
Any other staff members with? All right. I believe that's all.
Okay. We have two items for our closed session agenda this evening, item number 14 and item number 15, 14 being Government Code Section 54957, item 15, Government Code Section 54957.6. Are there any public comments regarding or questions regarding these two items before we go into closed session? Seeing none, we'll go into closed session, and we'll finish our discussion and then come out to report publicly when we're finished. Thank you for coming this evening.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll take about a 5 to 7 minute break.